back now with Lake Effect and WUWM's Project Milwaukee series on youth violence. In Milwaukee, emergency room doctors say gunshot wounds are an epidemic.
If this was an infectious disease that was inflicting this kind of harm to young men in a community, we'd have a full court press, if you will, of public health decision makers wanting to eradicate this disease.
Dr. Stephen Hargarten is chair of the Department of Emergency Medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Today, we're considering approaches to combating violence from around the country, and Hargarten's theory is shared in many cities. Much of Milwaukee's gang violence has its roots in Chicago. Chicago journalist Alex Kotlowitz has written about poverty, crime, and young people in that city for decades. In May, he wrote about children and violence in the New York Times Magazine. The article is called Blocking the Transmission of Violence, and he too uses that word epidemic. Alex Kotlowitz joins us on the line from Northwestern University. It's good to have you with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
There's this group in Chicago that you write about called Ceasefire, working to reach young people in that city, and you write about workers for this group whose title is Violence Interrupter. What does a violence interrupter do?
Right, not a very artful term, but it does kind of bluntly speak to what they do. They go out and try to interrupt shootings before they happen. I mean, they're blindly focused on that. I mean, if they're able to get a kid out of a gang or, you know, sort of get a kids out of the drug trade, all the better. But they're just completely focused on trying to interrupt shootings.
And so the founder of Ceasefire is a physician and part of a growing movement of people. They're in Milwaukee, too, who view violence as an infectious disease, a real public health issue. Now, out of all the writing and studying you've done of this issue, do you agree?
Well, you know, about 25, 30 years ago, we began to think about violence as a public health issue. But the main ways that we've thought about it is, one is trying to get guns off the street, trying to somehow limit access to weapons. And the other part is trying to educate, trying to get into the schools. And what Gary Slutkin has done, which is different from what most others have done, is he really sees violence as mimicking infectious diseases like tuberculosis and AIDS. And so he tries to attack it in the same way. He spent 10 years in Africa, I should back up. He spent 10 years in Africa battling cholera in the Somalian refugee camps and then AIDS in Uganda. And so he's trying to replicate what he did there with violence in this country and basically interrupting the transmission of violence as you would interrupt the transmission of tuberculosis or AIDS.
Gary Slutkin is the founder of Ceasefire in Chicago. It sounds like a fascinating personality too, but he does not believe that the threat of punishment is much of a motivator or often relevant at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been pretty well shown that punishment is not much of a deterrent. It's not to say that we shouldn't punish. I don't want to be misunderstood for that. But it is pretty well shown that punishment is not a deterrent. You look at all the people that we've locked up for very long sentences over the past 20 years, and you look at how limited, if any, impact it's had on violence, especially in our cities.
Retaliation is really at the heart of the piece that you wrote, and it's such a strong force on the street, and it seems like one of the interrupter's goals is to help the person who feels that he's been wronged save face or something and avoid this retaliation.
Right. I mean, let me back up. I mean, these interrupters who they hire are these guys mostly in their 40s and 50s. They're ex-gang leaders and drug dealers who've just come out of prison and have, for whatever reason, want to do something different with their life. I mean, many of them, to be honest, are just simply too old to get back on the streets. And so these guys have all these connections on the streets. They're incredibly well plugged in. And so they have the ear to the ground to hear about disputes and then try to go in and mediate. And one of the stories, for instance, that I tell is the story of a interrupter named Zale Hodenbach. And he gets a phone call one summer afternoon, and it's from a gentleman he knew whose son, 18-year-old son, had been murdered, shot on the streets of the south side of Chicago. And his uncle, the boy's uncle, is coming back from Texas with the intent of seeking revenge. And in fact, the uncle gets back. His nickname is Pac-Man because he was known to always pack a gun. He gets his hands on two handguns, and Zales goes in and tries to interrupt the shooting to be. He goes in and tries to convince Pac-Man from seeking revenge. And as you point out, one of the things that Zale has to do is to try to get Pac-Man to pull back and also to save face. And in the end, what he's able to do is he's able to lean on family. It's not what his brother wanted what Pac-Man's brother wanted. And so Zale's able to convince him that this is the right thing to do. And eventually he's able to get Pac-Man to not only pull back, but also to sort of move on with his life. And Pac-Man is now living down in Austin, Texas. And it's been hard. It's interesting. I talked to Pac-Man about 5 or 6 months after this, and I could tell he was still wrestling with this decision he had made. It was a really hard choice for him to walk away from that, from seeking revenge, from seeking retaliation.
Yeah, and that story you tell in the New York Times was very compelling, but you know, how often does an interrupter or anybody in a young person's life get in between that urge, that anger, that need to retaliate?
Right. Well, this is what the interrupters do. I mean, they really, that's all they're looking for, is these moments when people are have their hand on the trigger or about to have their hand on the trigger. And they're, that's, I mean, they put themselves in some pretty, I think, dangerous situations, but that's what they're out there to do, is to try to find those places where it looks like there might be a shooting as a result of some dispute, some shooting that somebody's going to retaliate against.
And these former gang members that you're talking about in Chicago working for Ceasefire, this one organization, they're walking a fine line between upholding the law and bending the law. They're really right. Living in the middle of two worlds.
Right. I wouldn't say between upholding the law and bending the law, but maybe between upholding the law and condoning illegal activity. Uh-huh. Because, again, they don't care if somebody wants to deal drugs, go deal drugs. Just don't shoot anybody. And there's another story that I tell in the piece where a middleman is arranging a drug deal with an out-of-town drug buyer. And he takes the out-of-town drug buyer along with $30,000 to these drug dealers, and he goes and meets them. And when they get there, they get robbed. They get robbed of the $30,000. And so the intermediary now has the guy who wanted to buy the drugs out looking for him. And he's out looking for these guys who stuck him up. And he knows one of the interrupters, and he tells the interrupters, man, you got to do something because something's going to go down. And so the interrupters get in there, and what they're able to do is they're able to find the stick-up men and negotiate and get them to return not all but some of the money, enough at least to cool everybody off. So, again, they don't care. They're dealing drugs. Let them deal drugs. Just don't shoot anybody.
So if you're one of these young gang members living in one of these troubled neighborhoods, you walk away from retaliation for whatever reason, say, in one incident. You point out what's waiting for them on the other side, lousy schools, decrepit housing, no jobs. And that's the big point, really.
Right, it is. And I think there are many people who would make the argument that if you really want to do something about the violence, you've got to rebuild these communities, you've got to rebuild our schools. Which is true, but I would argue, I think, or at least I've come to a place after 20 years writing and reporting on these issues, that if you're going to do anything about rebuilding community, that you've got to do something to decrease that violence, that no matter what else you do. And so you've got to work on both paths. And you're absolutely right. You've got to work on diminishing the violence, and then you've got to also work on fortifying schools and fortifying community and fortifying family. I mean, all these institutions that are so critical to the well-being of young people.
So the goal is, number one, then, to reduce the violence. What do you think is working? I mean, a program like this, is that one of your best examples, or what's working out there?
Well, I've got to tell you, Jane, I've really wrestled with this for 20 years. I've lost a lot of young friends to violence. I've been to far too many funerals, and I'm not sure what works. This is one of the first programs that I've come upon that I just thought had some promise. And what's more, was thinking about it differently than others. And I think that's really important, given that nothing else has seemed to work. And I'm, at the moment, I'm a fan of what Ceasefire is doing. I think, you know, there's a recent study out of Northwestern that was funded by the Department of Justice that indicates that they've had some impact in the neighborhoods they've been working. Baltimore is now doing a version of Ceasefire, as is Newark. And I think they're onto something. I don't think it's necessarily the answer, but I think that it's a very real and strong component in trying to tackle the violence.
And there in Chicago, I know that Ceasefire has had to deal with budget cuts, and we talk about this in every city. If you had all the money in the world to toss at this problem, is this where you would start? And do you think that would help?
It is where I would start. I mean, that, and I would try to look at more creative policing, which I think a lot of urban police departments are already doing. But absolutely. I mean, I think for, you know, that given the what an organization like Ceasefire does and the expense, I think you're certainly getting your money's worth. And I do think we've got to figure out a way to somehow tangle with the stubborn persistence of urban violence.
Well, Alex Kotlowitz, thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks, Jane, for having me.
Alex Kotlowitz of Chicago is a Peabody Award-winning journalist. His New York Times Magazine article, Blocking the Transmission of Violence, appeared last month. We spoke with him from Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois, where he teaches writing. Just ahead, it's been a heady political season for women in politics, but not necessarily Wisconsin politics.
The question I ask myself as a woman that looks at trends like these, what happened? How come there were more women several years ago, and as we're getting more advanced and more progressive, we have fewer women?
Training a new generation of local leaders, that's up next on Lake Effect from WUWM.